Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. Wars are ending, aren't they? Why is military spending twice what it was in 2001? Well, the United States and NATO are surrounding Russia.
Today, NATO is on steroids, now moving even into Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia on Russia's border.
Isn't the Cold War over? Why threaten Russia?
The principal answer is because Russia has the world's largest supply of natural gas and significant supplies of oil.
And the United States is doubling its military presence around China, in Okinawa, Guam, Jeju Island, Australia. Why?
The Pentagon has made the decision that we are not going to be able to compete with China economically in the coming period. But if we're able to double our military presence in that region and essentially encircle the coast of China, then we will be able to control their importation of resources that are vital to run their economy.
I'm delighted to have as a guest on Talk Nation Radio this week, Bruce Gagnon. He is the co-founder and coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. The website is Space for Peace. That's the numeral four, spaceforpeace.org. Bruce is the author of Come Together Right Now, Organizing Stories from a Fading Empire. He blogs at spaceforpeace.blogspot.com. Bruce Gagnon, thanks for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you, David.
It's wonderful to have you here. You've been writing recently as well as speaking. You've been on speaking tours, doing lots of terrific events. You've been writing recently about Russia, and a lot of Americans think the Cold War ended. Russia is our ally. We don't have any conflicts militarily with Russia. Is there something else going on we aren't being told about?
Well, yeah, I think so. Today, the United States and NATO are militarily surrounding Russia. In the case of the U.S., we're positioning so-called missile defense systems all around Russia. And with NATO expansion, violating a promise that was made by former Secretary of State Jim Baker to Mikhail Gorbachev at the time that the former Soviet Union dissolved, that NATO would not expand one centimeter eastward into the old Warsaw Pact bloc. Well, that when Clinton became president, he broke that promise, and today NATO is on steroids, now moving even into Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia on Russia's border. So, you know, one has to ask the question, why? Why is the U.S. and NATO doing all of this? And I believe the principal answer is because Russia has the world's largest supply of natural gas and significant supplies of oil. And with the Arctic beginning to melt, the Arctic ice, as a result of climate change, we see the oil corporations salivating at the thought of getting up in that region and drilling. And as it turns out, the Russian Federation sits on a lot of Arctic seashore. And so there's going to be huge conflict in the coming years over these resources. And as I've been asking, isn't it clear to us by now that the Pentagon's primary job in the world today is to serve as a resource extraction service on behalf of corporate globalization? So I think that's what the demonization of Russia that we're seeing in our media is all about, and the encirclement of Russia militarily as well.
And what are these missile defense bases that the United States and NATO are putting near the borders of Russia? I mean, they sound nice from the name. They sound defensive.
Well, missile defense, first of all, is a key element in U.S. first strike planning. Every year now, for the past several years, the U.S. Space Command has been wargaming a first strike attack on China set in the year 2016, who we are also encircling today with these so-called missile defense systems. And in this first strike attack, computer war game that they do at the Space Command, they try to take out China's 20 nuclear missiles that are capable of hitting the west coast of the United States. And after that first hit, we don't get all of them, or the Pentagon doesn't get all of them. And then so China fires its remaining retaliatory capability. And so the missile defense systems that are based on land and on ships, on Navy Aegis destroyers, actually made where I live in Bath, Maine, the job of these so-called missile defense systems then is to take out the remaining retaliatory capability. So today, both Russia and China face this encirclement. And so the U.S. is deploying ground-based missile defense interceptors today in Poland and Romania, missile defense radars in Turkey. They're talking to Georgia on Russia's southern border about putting them there. And at the same time, Obama is deploying Navy Aegis destroyers with missile defense on board in the Baltic Sea, the Black Sea, and the Mediterranean Sea. So Russia, of course, is freaking out, saying, why should we continue to negotiate reductions of nuclear weapons with you, the new START treaty that Obama and Russia negotiated with very modest nuclear weapons reductions, is now in danger. Russia's talking about pulling out of that treaty. And they're saying it's not in our interest to reduce the number of nuclear weapons when you're developing these technologies to take out our retaliatory capability after a U.S. first strike. So if we reduce our weapons, our nuclear weapons at this time, we're only helping you create a more effective possibility, a more successful first strike attack. And so that is really driving huge conflict with both Russia and China today.
Now, I've read reports, Bruce Gagnon, of Russia threatening to preemptively strike at these missile defense bases in Eastern Europe if their construction and expansion continues. How serious is that threat, and what can we do to suggest that there is a problem with that kind of threat when our nation has made and acted on the same kind of preemptive strikes?
Well, you know, in the case of U.S. bullying, a lot of countries just sort of have had to, in a way, accept it or, deal with the consequences. I think of Iraq, I think of Afghanistan, when the U.S. goes in and bullies another country. In the case of Russia, Russia can actually stand up to the bully, and they are doing it now. They're countering with their own threats. I'm not in favor, don't get me wrong, of having a nuclear war begin between the United States and Russia. But indeed, Russia has the ability to fight back, and they're not rolling over. They're standing up and saying, we're not going to go along with the show here. So I think it's a real signal that things are really tense. And as we see NATO increasingly expanding, NATO is being brought into this missile defense system in a big way. All the 28 NATO countries now pledging that they'll be a part of it. And as they expand eastward again, encircling Russia, it's a real signal for conflict. And Russia and I think China are not going to just go along with the show. They're not going to submit, roll over and submit. I think they're going to fight back, as one would expect most people would do when they're bullied.
It seems like when the Soviet Union had missiles in Cuba and we were freaking out, they were eventually pulled out of there, which was the sensible policy. But you mentioned China as well. Why and how is the United States military encircling or threatening China?
Well, in the past few months, the Obama administration announced a pivot of U.S. foreign and military policy into the Asia-Pacific region. Along with that, Obama followed that announcement up with a visit to Australia, where he negotiated a deal to send 2,500 U.S. Marines to Darwin in northern Australia. I hadn't heard that Australia was soon to be invaded by anyone and needed the U.S. Marines to come in to protect them. And clearly, it's not about defending Australia at all. It's part of this overall U.S. doubling of military presence in the Asia-Pacific region in order to literally surround China. In addition, the U.S. is now expanding bases in many different countries, mostly islands. For example, Okinawa, Guam, And then on Jeju Island in South Korea, just off the Korean Peninsula, the U.S. is forcing the South Korean government to build a Navy base that would allow the U.S. to position its warships just 300 miles from the coast of mainland China. And as I try to understand why the U.S. is doing this, the only conclusion I can come to is that the U.S. has, the Pentagon has made the decision that we are not going to be able to compete with China economically in the coming period. But if we're able to double our military presence in that region and essentially encircle the coast of China, then we will be able to control their importation of resources that are vital to run their economy. For example, China imports 60% of their oil on ships, and they pass through this area of the Yellow Sea, which, as it turns out, Jeju Island sits basically at the front gate of the Yellow Sea. And with U.S. warships ported there, aircraft carriers, Aegis destroyers with missile defense systems, submarines, the U.S. would be able to theoretically choke off China's importation of resources, or thinking of it another way, hold a gun to their head. You don't always have to pull the trigger when you hold a gun to someone's head. Sometimes just having the gun there is enough. And so I believe that this is the idea. Hold the keys to China's economic engine by controlling their access to vital resources to fuel their economy. It's a very dangerous, very provocative strategy, and going to be a very expensive one. And that's why we're seeing now announcements that they're going to have to cut back on food stamps and Meals on Wheels and other Medicaid, other programs in this country, because they need, that they say in Congress, the money to continually fund this military expansion that is now, I believe, primarily being used to control access to resources around the world on behalf of corporate globalization.
Now, there's been resistance on Jeju Island by the local population, as in Okinawa, as in cities in Europe and around the world, to U.S. base expansion. What is the status of that struggle on Jeju Island, and what lessons, if any, have been learned in terms of the resistance movement to U.S. military bases?
There's really a great campaign going on there. On the south side of Jeju Island is a small village of about 1,200 people called Gangjeon Village, and for 5 years they've been fighting in a very determined way, to nonviolently fighting to stop this base from being constructed. They've really slowed it down. It's only 15% built, and the Samsung Corporation happens to be the lead contractor, and a boycott has been declared of Samsung products, by the way. But they are now beginning to blast the rocky coast, the sacred rocky coast, where the people have worshipped nature for 450 years in this village's history. People are coming from all over Korea. Catholic priests and nuns are coming in great numbers and being arrested. People have begun to come from around the world as well. Last February, the village leaders invited us to come to their village for our 20th annual Global Network Conference. Each year we hold a conference in a different country to try to shine a light on various manifestations of this space arms race. And because these so-called missile defense systems are a key element in the U.S. Star Wars program, we went there, and 16 of us were arrested for trying to crawl under the razor wire to get onto the sacred rocky coast. So the people are struggling mightily, and we're trying to continually spread word about it and build support for them all over the planet. And in recent weeks, there have been a series of protests at Korean consulates and embassies in London and Paris and Washington, New York, Seattle, and other countries around the world. So we're beginning to see Jeju Island and the struggle there. We're beginning to see that people are finding out about it and finding ways to support the people there, because Jeju Island is really a key strategic point for the U.S. in this encirclement of China, and thusly, I think, a key strategic point for the peace movement as well. because if we hope at all to stop a new arms race, a new Cold War, particularly a very dangerous military confrontation between the U.S. and China, then we have to have a victory, and a victory on Jeju Island of stopping this naval base would be a wonderful thing. And in addition to that, the sacred environmental nature of this place just offshore, these soft coral reefs that are endangered species that will be destroyed as the seabed is dredged in order to bring these big U.S. warships into port there on Jeju Island. So it's an environmental issue, a human rights issue, a peace issue, a real key strategic place, I think, for all of our movements.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Our guest is Bruce Gagnon, coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Space4Peace.org is the website. Bruce, I wonder about the fact that we are continuing to expand our military base presence around the world, but there also seems to be a trend afoot to move away from wars of thousands and hundreds of thousands of troops to drone wars, to surgical strikes and targeted killings and kidnappings and wars fought with completely unmanned aerial vehicles. And you talk about the unique ability of Russia to push back against U.S. aggression, but I wonder whether soon many nations will be able to push back against U.S. aggression using the very same tools that the United States does, as many other nations are acquiring drones, purchasing them from us, from Israel, reverse engineering them in the case of Iran, which captured a U.S. drone. Al-Qaeda got its hands on a U.S. drone in Yemen, and so forth. What does the violent reaction to U.S. empire look like in the coming months and years?
Well, first let me say that drones are a perfect example of how space technology facilitates modern warfare, because drones are basically flown by U.S. military satellites that link the drone flying, let's say, over Pakistan or Afghanistan, and the pilot, so-called pilot, back at a base somewhere in the United States, at a place like Creech Air Force Base outside of Las Vegas. So this military satellite hooks them up in real time, split-second time, allows the camera on board the drone to send the signal via the satellite back to the pilot back in the U.S. in just a matter of a second. And so our concern is this, what we call the militarization of space, increasingly using space to put in place these military satellites that essentially become weapons in and of themselves. And clearly, one way that a country could begin to react to the United States, yes, they could attack us with drones, but another very effective way would be that they would try to take out a ground station. Because as the military satellites orbit the Earth, they have to talk to the Earth just below them, too. They send signals to the Earth that are beamed back and forth via other satellites back to Command Central in the United States. And so that means that all over the planet today, whether it's Northern England or Australia or Greenland or Norway or many, many, many other places, the Space Command has had to establish what are called downlink facilities or ground stations that tie into this whole space network. So one way that an adversary could hit back at the U.S. is to take out a ground station, which would be very doable, very easy thing to do, or begin to, with higher technology, take out U.S. military satellites. So there's lots of ways to fight back against this system. And as you begin to take out satellites in space, you create more space debris, or what we call space junk, that is already becoming a problem up there. And soon they say that it's going to be so much of it that it's just going to be a minefield, and that one thing is going to be crashing into the other and just accelerating the problem as we go along. And at some point in time, that it would be impossible for any country to launch rockets and get beyond this minefield. So it's a complete environmental disaster beginning to develop in space. So But beyond that, I want to say something about these future wars. I think Africa is a indication of what lies in the future because of the enormous resources that are available on the African continent. The Pentagon has set up, they've set up basing relationships. They've assigned every state National Guard to a different African country, and they say your job is to go in and set up a lily pad basing arrangement in that particular African country so that the U.S. would have very quick interventionary capability to suppress anyone that rises up against corporate domination. We're now seeing a lot of corporations go into Africa, buy up the land, and telling people that have been living on this land for forever that they no longer have access to it because some corporation has bought it because of the minerals under the soil that could be used for cell phones and computers, or because there's oil there, or because there's water. I think the U.S.-NATO attack on Libya was an example of the, what's coming to Africa in the years ahead.
Bruce, how does someone find out which African nation their state's National Guard is targeting?
I don't know that. I don't know that, but I would imagine you could begin to search the AFRICOM or Africa Command website, where some of that information would be available. I learned about this on C-SPAN when I saw the general in charge of all of the 50 state National Guards at the Pentagon holding a news conference. And he had a huge map of Africa, and he made this case that they were now assigning all these 50 state National Guards. I think the future will be many, many very quick interventionary sort of counterinsurgency, counterterrorism, they'll call it, but it's all going to be quick interventionary operations, both in on the African continent and in other places where resources are available that these corporations want to get a hold of.
Bruce Gagnon, I should have mentioned earlier and should thank you. You contributed a wonderful chapter to a book that I edited recently called The Military-Industrial Complex at 50, which people can find at mic50.org. The goal of this madness seems to be related to natural resources, to oil and gas deposits around the earth. Who is it that benefits from these insane policies and these incredible levels of military spending beyond what we saw during the Cold War? Is it the weapons makers? Is it the oil companies?
Well, I think all of the above, absolutely. You know, I've been telling, I just did a 30-day, 24-city speaking tour from San Diego, California, to Seattle, Washington. Yeah, I think it's all of the above. But one story I told over and over again on that trip was the story about Barack Obama and the Crown family in Chicago, who in 2008 were the majority stockholders in General Dynamics Corporation that owns Bath Iron Works, where I live in Maine. And there at Bath Iron Works, they build these Aegis destroyers being outfitted with missile defense systems. And as it turned out, the Crown family gave Obama $500,000 in his 2008 run, and they also raised money for him within the military-industrial complex. After the election was over, after Obama won, Aviation Week and Space Technology magazine reported that Obama received more money from the military-industrial complex in 2008 than the right-wing war hawk John McCain did. So soon thereafter, Obama announces that Bush's version of missile defense that he was going to deploy in Poland and the Czech Republic was being shut down. He was not going to deploy it. Some people cheered. Some people said to me, "Why aren't you cheering, Bruce?" And I said, "Watch the magician's other hand." And not long after that, Obama announced that instead he was going to be putting more emphasis on the Navy Aegis destroyer missile defense systems that are made by, General Dynamics. And as it turns out, the cost of a standard Aegis destroyer at Bath Iron Works was $1.5 billion. But Obama announced that a new version would be made, and they're now working on the first one here at Bath. It's called the DDG-1000, a fancy higher-tech version. And the cost between $4 and $7 billion per ship. In fact, the Navy didn't even want it because it was so expensive, and they were afraid it was going to eat into their shipbuilding budget. Obama told the Navy they had to build it. So I think, in fact, there's absolute evidence that these corporations, these weapons corporations, compete with each other for the love of the president and the Congress, and they play games and do what they can to make sure that their particular technologies get funded, and they're out there supporting wars that benefit these resource extraction corporations, like the oil corporations and mining corporations, that want to get at these declining resources around the world. That I think the coming period is going to be all about military conflict over declining resources, whether it's oil, natural gas, water, minerals, etc., and that our quote-unquote brave young American soldiers will be used over and over again to go to war to benefit these corporations.
Bruce, what can people do? What big events do you have coming up? Is your next week of actions in October? What else can you tell us that we can do to oppose this cycle of madness that we're in?
Well, every year during Keep Space for Peace Week in October, this year it'll be October 6th through the 13th, we call for local events, decentralized events all over the world. We're going to be having a military satellite drone connection theme this year, how the military satellites facilitate the use of drones around the world. In the meantime, I think that people really need to begin to, if they want to stop all these plans for endless war, if they want to stop the funding of weapons and space technology, drones and everything else, we've got to escalate the fight to save social progress, because it's like two trains heading for a collision. One is called endless war, and the other one is called social progress, social spending. And one of these two trains is going to be derailed, and we've got to derail the endless war train. And the way to do that, I think, is by fighting for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the welfare programs, food stamps, Meals on Wheels, all these kind of programs of social uplift, public education, because there's an effort to privatize education now, a huge effort underway to do that. So I think in the interim period, this has got to be a key element. And showing the connection, showing how the military, how the Pentagon has become the military arm of corporate globalization, that the military, the Pentagon is the largest polluter on the planet, that the Pentagon has the largest carbon footprint on the planet. These are important links that have to be made. And I think that all of us need to continue to support the Occupy movement and to bring this military connection, this military arm of corporate globalization connection, into the Occupy movement. So there's a much better understanding of how the military relates to this corporate domination, not only of our country, this drowning of our democracy, but to the drowning of democracy around the world.
Bruce Gagnon is coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space. Bruce, thanks for being on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you, David.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, engineered by Christiane Brown in Reno, Nevada, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. Until next time.